I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
This podcast may contain strong language and references to violence. Listener discretion is advised.
The citizens assemble. The citizens assemble.
Kia ora koutou, nō mai haere mai and welcome to the Citizens Handbook podcast, the companion podcast to the Citizens Handbook web series that you should watch. And if you haven't watched it, go do that right now. My name is Robbie, and this is a podcast for people who want to know about New Zealand but hate to read. So, we've invited a comedian and turned civics education into a game that someone can win. To make sure that nobody cheats, we've got a moderator called Finn. Finn, tell us how the game works.
Okay, Robbie, I will.
Thanks, bud.
Robbie and our guest are going to take turns explaining a topic to each other, but they're also going to sneak in three cheeky little lies. Whoever spots the most lies from the other person wins. Easy.
Easy. Today, our special guest is Pax Asadi from 7 Days and Frickin' Dangerous Bro, and we'll be talking about colonization. What happens when one group of people decide they should be put in charge and won't take no for an answer? I'll be talking about Edward Gibbon Wakefield, and Pax will be talking about the clash at Waito Valley. There'll also be some lies to look for, hidden away like a needle in your favourite haystack. Hi Pax, how you doing?
Good.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling excited, elated.
Okay.
A little bit bubbly.
Okay, how many more synonyms do you have ready to go?
Those are all the synonyms
okay,
I know.
Great.
Yeah, I only have NCA level 1.
Okay,
yeah.
Well that really bodes well for me.
Yeah, it does actually.
Getting
yeah,
into yeah. this game.
Yeah. This is all NCA level 2 stuff.
Oh, yeah. Damn it!
All of this.
It's all NCA level 2 history.
Yeah, we cut out all the level 1 stuff when we heard about your education.
I'm screwed.
Oh well, good luck. Yeah, look how happy and confident I am now.
Yeah.
Okay, Pax, I'm going to lie to you.
Yeah.
Now.
Okay, great.
You okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I'm going to lie to you 3 times about a man named Edward Gibbon Wakefield.
Okay.
Edward Gibbon Wakefield was a child-stealing con artist who married a 16-year-old and then 10 years later married a different 15-year-old. He also invented how to colonize New Zealand while he was stuck in prison. According to the highly informed Encyclopedia of New Zealand, Wakefield was born in a town called Probably London on the 20th of March 1796. His father refused to have anything to do with his parenting, and his mother was really sick, so he was pretty much abandoned as a child. As you'd expect from a nascent con artist, he was described as charming but difficult, and he was constantly in trouble. He was withdrawn from his first school in 1807, so he got sent to Westminster School. But then in 1810, he just refused to go there anymore. Then he was sent to Edinburgh High School, but they kicked him out in 1811, because even as a child, he was an absolute piece of shit. Then he went home and did absolutely nothing for 2 years, before joining the diplomatic service to do absolutely nothing all over Europe. While working as a diplomat in France, he challenged Jean Laborde to a duel, but was reportedly too hungover to turn up the following morning. In 1816, he married a 16-year-old and convinced her dad to give him heaps of money and a job promotion. She died 4 years later, and Wakefield wanted another job promotion, so he found a 15-year-old schoolgirl with a rich dad and told her she had to come visit him because her mother was dangerously ill. That was a lie. To clarify, he was lying.
Right.
I'm not just pointing out where the lies are.
Right, okay.
My own spiel. Okay, great. Then he told the 15-year-old girl that she had to marry him to save her dad from all his terrible money troubles. That was also a lie. Same rule applies.
Okay.
He married his child bride and immediately fled the country. Eventually, he was caught and sentenced to 3 years imprisonment for abduction. and the marriage was dissolved by a special act of Parliament. While Wakefield was in prison, he saw all the poor people having a terrible time and thought, oh, hey, what if we just send all the poor people somewhere else? So he wrote a book called A Letter from Sydney, which was a smart idea because A Letter from Sydney sounds way better than The Rantings of a Child Abductor Stuck in a British Prison. Wakefield's basic idea was that the British should stop giving away so much of their colonial land for free. Britain should charge a price for the land they'd stolen so that they could pay for poor people to go work there. Basically, Wakefield was like, yep, definitely keep stealing the indigenous land. No problems there. Just make sure you sell that land so you can send over poor people to work for the rich people. Based on Wakefield's ideas, the New Zealand Association was formed in 1837 and smushed into two other groups to become the New Zealand Company in 1838 or 1839. I couldn't figure out which. The records weren't great. Wakefield became the director of the company throughout the 1840s, frequently travelling back and forth to New Zealand to negotiate his land deals with local iwi, before settling in Canada to help with their colonisation over there. He was then kicked out of Canada for having an affair with the Postmaster General's wife, which was the first and only time he was ever romantically associated with an age-appropriate woman. Leaving Canada, Wakefield moved to Wellington, where he was elected to the Hutt seat for the House of Representatives and to the Wellington Provincial Council. Then he got rheumatic fever, retired from politics, became deeply depressed, and died. In the end, he only had a couple of friends, including his son that numerous sources described as disappointing, his German manservant, and two bulldogs. He was a horrible man who died a sad death, and that's the story of Edward Gibbon Wakefield.
Interesting guy.
Yeah.
It's interesting that a guy who's like not great and just goes to jail then gets elected to like boards and runs things. What a crazy time the 1800s were.
I think for sure one of the reasons that he like invented a better way to colonize was because people were starting to be like, hey, you can't like come to the fancy parties anymore because of going to prison and
having a 15-year-old wife.
And your 15-year-old wife saying,
good luck, man.
And he's like, I'll go start my own country.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they were like, right. And are you going to tell them about the 15-year-old wife thing? And he's like, I'm not going to bring it up.
Yeah. I can picture this guy. You know, like suave, charismatic, but if you look into his eyes, there's like an unpredictability that is like scary. But on the surface, he's super charming.
That is absolutely like in all of the accounts of him.
Yeah, it's just, I can see him. I can see him. In fact, Robbie, he weirdly looks a lot like you.
Yeah. I did feel a little bit like you were describing me. I was immediately charming, but he doesn't seem settled. There's something about him that seems a little
super
not at ease.
Neurotic?
Neurotic?
Nah, neuronic.
Neuronic.
I'm going to stick with what I said.
Sure, go for it. Double down.
Hey, level one, man. It's all I've got. Okay, so lies. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did you say at the beginning that his mother was sick?
I did.
And then later on you said that his mother being sick was a lie.
No, he said when he wanted another job promotion, he found a 15-year-old schoolgirl with a rich dad and told her that she had to come visit him. Because her mother was dangerously ill. He was like, oh, you're quick, come here. Your mum's ill. I'm not sure if like they
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Like, your mum's ill, leave her. Or he's like, oi, sick people are gross. Come hang out here instead.
But also she isn't sick. So he's like, oh, get away from your mum. She's real sick.
And it's
like,
she won't tell
she
you.
She seems fine.
She's doing a cartwheel.
Yeah. That's a symptom.
She's that's got cartwheelitis.
Yeah. She will do that.
Yeah. Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to throw one out here.
Go for it.
Great.
I think the duel is fake. The duel that he challenged someone to a duel and then he was too hungover to show up.
All right.
I'm going to say that's fake.
That accusation is correct.
Yep.
Great.
Absolutely made up.
Yeah.
100%.
It just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it did.
You were telling a story and then you were like, and then he wanted to duel someone. And I was like, why?
Why did Robbie throw that in there?
Yeah, why?
I'll tell you why Robbie threw that in there. Because he had to put in a lie. Didn't narratively fit
at all. Okay, the other one I'm going to throw out.
Yep.
It seems crazy to me that he was he got made director of the company after being in jail. To be like, you're a prisoner because you've done bad things. Oh, hey, you're the director of the company now. I feel like this is wrong on my part, but something's telling me that it just doesn't feel right. So I'm going to say he wasn't the director of the company.
So Pex has got doubts about Edward Gibbon Wakefield was director of the New Zealand company.
Yeah.
That accusation is incorrect.
He was.
Yeah.
He was.
That's wild to me.
The public sector had started to kind of pull away from him. And he was like, I'm going to go into the private sector. I'm going to go full colonization.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just run this company.
That's
wild that it's a
private company that did colonization.
That's also wild. Just that very fact is like...
Yeah.
What, like, do they have like a jingle? Do they have...
Come on down and steal some land. Yeah.
If there's natives on your land, we'll take care of that.
Yeah.
Call 0800. Well, they didn't have phones.
Yeah. Telegram.
Send us a pigeon.
It's hugely the New Zealand company's fault. I think also, like, even people that did the colonizing didn't sort of realize the extent of colonizing they were making way for.
Yeah.
And it was people like Wakefield who were like, yeah, more people.
Yeah.
Let's send more people
in. Keep bringing them over.
In fact, we're going to sell land and we're going to spend that money sending more over. That whole strategy just meant that there were just more and more Pākehā arrived.
Yeah.
And then they were just like, forgot about the treaty.
Yeah. Yes.
All of that.
Okay. So do I get three goes?
You do.
So you're one from two.
Yeah.
Damn.
So you've got one more.
Okay. I'm going to say that having an affair with the age-appropriate woman is a lie because I think he never had an interest in having a relationship with someone his age.
All right, so we have an accusation from Pax that Edward Gibbon Wakefield did not have an age-appropriate relationship with the Postmaster General's wife or possibly even anyone. And that accusation is correct.
Yes.
Yep, spot on.
Okay.
I mean, you understand this man...
I know him too well.
Yeah, never with an age-appropriate woman.
Do you feel like you've interacted with this guy before, but just like in our time?
Absolutely.
I feel like I've interacted with him.
So Pax is on a very solid 2 points.
Okay, great.
It does mean that there's one more lie in there somewhere, Robbie.
That I haven't found.
Which we haven't uncovered. So what's that one?
Oh, interesting.
Oh, the other lie was when I said that he frequently travelled back and forth to New Zealand to negotiate land deals with local iwi.
I'm not saying this to be like, oh, I was going to say that, but I was genuinely going to say that only because I was like, it's in the 1800s. How do you frequently travel back and forth? Once you've gone somewhere, you're there.
You're there now.
I also know that that isn't a lie, Pax, because you only wrote things down, I think, on every single lie that I said.
And I was
immediately panicking. I was like, well, I've lost this goddamn game.
Yeah.
I don't stand a chance. Yeah. I've seen Pax go, that's a lie. Can I write that down? It's also a lie. I'll jot that one down. I was like, oh, Christ, this is going really badly.
All you need is level one.
So, at the end of round one, Pax is on a very solid 2 points. Robbie on a pretty pathetic 0 points still.
Mm-hmm. Come on, Robbie.
Yeah.
But that brings us
into... 0 points total, actually, for the...
What do you mean?
The first episode.
Oh, right. Okay. You're on zero for everything.
Robbie has yet to gain a single point in his own podcast. Robbie's going to have to get 3 out of 3 if he wants to...
I have faith in Robbie.
Great. That makes one of us.
Yeah. All right. Robbie, I'm going to tell you about the Wairau Valley incident. The first big conflict between Māori and Pākehā after Te Tiriti o Waitangi happened in the Wairau Valley, near modern-day Blenheim. It was in 1843, so 3 years after Te Tiriti. One side of this conflict was Ngāti Toa, who occupied the land of the Wairau Valley. And the other side was the New Zealand Company, we've heard about them, who reckoned they owned the land. Spoiler alert, they didn't. What happened was the New Zealand Company had a nice little bespoke settlement in Nelson, where settlers largely got on with local iwi, and it was all good. But unfortunately, there were hundreds more settlers on their way to Nelson, and there wasn't going to be enough space for them. So the New Zealand Company started to stress out. So in preparation for expanding their settlement, they start surveying the Wairau Valley. They argue with Ngāti Toa that actually the New Zealand company has the rightful deed to the land, but Ngāti Toa is pretty confident that that's not the case. And Ngāti Toa rangatira, te rauparaha, goes, well, look, why don't you get the land commissioner down here to settle this? But the company was like, we might just start surveying anyway. So without permission, the company send out some surveyors to start drawing up maps for the settlement. And one day, Te Rauparaha and his nephew, Te Rangi Hayata, go over to the surveyor's hut while they were off having a bath. And they burn down the hut with all their clothes inside. They were like, your hut was made from the scrub of Ngāti Toa land, so we're just burning our own property. I don't see any problem with that. But now the New Zealand company is super mad. They put together a posse of about 50 men, including Nelson's chief constable, who had the incredible name of Henry Shufflebottom, and march over to Te Rauparaha's place to try and arrest him and Te Rangi Hayata on arson charges. When the posse reach the Tuamarina stream, they find Te Rauparaha and Ngāti Toa waiting for them, and the police constable Shufflebottom goes over very confidently with a pair of handcuffs, and he tries to slap them on Te Rauparaha's wrists. So someone from Ngāti Toa cracks out a shot from their musket, and all of a sudden, there's a massive shootout between the settler militia and Ngāti Toa. Bullets flying, people screaming, people running around. But eventually, Ngāti Toa wins. The settlers...
The best description of a battle.
People running around.
People running around.
Eventually, Ngāti Toa wins. The settlers turn and run back home, but Ngāti Toa chases after them and catches most of them up and kills them, as utu for killing Te Rangi Hayata's wife, Te Rongo. In the end, 4 Māori were killed and 22 Pākehā, including Arthur Wakefield, Edward Wakefield's brother. And so, these Nelson settlers kicked up a fuss to the Governor-General, Robert Fitzroy. They're like, send in the army, get some revenge, man. And he's like, wait, give me a second, I'll have a think. And after, he goes down and interviews everyone involved and tries to figure out what happened. Fitzroy goes, yeah, it turns out you guys asked for this for sure. His actual words were, in the first place, the white men were in the wrong. They had no right to survey the land. They had no right to build the houses on the land. And they were then first in the wrong. I will not avenge their deaths. Needless to say, there weren't that many governors who would be that just. The settlers were so mad at Fitzroy, they actually burnt an effigy of him and petitioned to get rid of him. They end up succeeding, and he got sent back to England and replaced with an absolute psycho called George Grey. But that's a whole other story. And that is the story of the first big conflict between Māori and Pākehā after Te Tiriti o Waitangi.
Okay, I'm going to say that Ngāti Toa did not shoot first.
Right. We've got an accusation coming in from Robbie about Ngāti Toa starting the shootout. And that accusation is correct.
Robbie.
So far, so good.
On a roll.
So what did happen?
It was the settler who shot first. Apparently they were crossing the stream and one of the settlers accidentally let off a shot with their musket.
Oh, right, accidentally.
Yeah.
Oh, whoops.
But I can also imagine it being like the settlers were going over to fight, but a chunk of the settlers are just like, I'm just a shoemaker.
Yeah.
You know?
For
and
sure.
And he's holding a musket, and there's Māori dudes on the other side of the stream doing like the neck, throat, slicey hand gesture, going like, you're finished.
I just love cobbling.
Wow, okay, so.
Good job, Robbie.
One from one. It's a great start.
Yeah, and that's the only one I have any level of confidence on.
Okay.
So, great. Purely based on the fact that I researched Wakefield.
Yes.
And I don't remember Arthur Wakefield. I'm going to say he didn't die in the battle. That's my official guess. Lock it in.
Robbie has doubts about Arthur Wakefield dying at Waito Valley. That accusation is incorrect.
He did die. Okay, one from two.
So the best you can do now is draw.
Yes, okay, there is a tiebreaker.
Oh, okay.
Ready to go.
Okay, interesting.
Could you read the bit about what the governor said and then people burning effigies in response to that?
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
So his actual words were, in the first place, the white men were in the wrong. They had no right to survey the land. They had no right to build the houses on the land. I will not avenge their deaths. And then the settlers were so mad at Fitzroy, they actually burnt an effigy of him and petitioned to get rid of him. And they end up succeeding and got him sent back to England and replaced him with an absolute psycho called George Grey. But that's a whole other story.
Okay, I don't think that's the reason that Fitzroy was removed as governor of New Zealand. That is my official guess. I can see that Pex is smiling a little bit, which doesn't feel good.
No, I'm smiling at your success, man.
Right.
The accusation is incorrect.
God. Nah, I was smiling at your failure.
Damn it. I knew it.
Turns out the settlers really hated when the Governor General stood up for Maori.
Even just a little.
Yeah.
The actual, Robbie, I don't want to say it was right there on a silver platter.
Okay, but you have kind of just said that.
I have, yeah. And shame on you.
Okay, great.
The chief constable was not called Henry Shufflebottom.
You bastard.
His name was Henry Thompson. You. Thompson.
Yeah, the worst name. But and you Robbie... just wanted to say bottom again and again?
Yeah, and you know what? It was fun. I liked it, Robbie. It was right there.
It was right there.
So there's one other lie stuck in
there
somewhere.
Oh, yes, there is.
Oh, is this around the governor?
No, it's around the burning of the hut. So they burnt down the hut, but they actually took care to protect the surveyor's belongings. They didn't just let their clothes and stuff burn. They actually made the effort to make sure that their belongings were safe before they burnt down the hut.
So when they said, we only burn things that you stole from our land, they meant that literally.
Literally,
and they were very careful to make sure that that was literally true.
The stuff
true.
That they didn't steal from their land, they did not burn.
That is remarkably generous.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Pax, you've come through with 2 points
for
spotting two lies. Mm. And Robbie...
Oh, yes.
...has gained a total of 1 point.
Okay, well, great. Congratulations, Pax.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So proud of you. Oh, thank you so much for being a part of the Citizens Handbook podcast on this episode on colonization.
So what do I win?
So...
It's a supermarket voucher.
Okay.
It's expired, though.
But you get
an expired supermarket. What supermarket is it for?
Food Town.
Oh, that doesn't even exist anymore.
It's expired. So, to be honest, we only noticed it was expired before we started recording.
I wish I knew it was expired. I spent $20 on it.
So time travel is the only way that I can redeem this.
Yes. But we're so glad that you came.
Yeah.
Yep. And congratulations.
Thank you.
The Citizens Handbook.
If you liked this podcast, you'll love the web series, The Citizens Handbook, and you can find it at rnz.co.nz. The Citizens Handbook podcast was researched and written by Phineas Tippett and me, Robbie Nicol. It is produced by Izzy Walton and Kevin & Co. The technical producer is Tim Batt. RNZ's supervising producer is Justin Gregory, and RNZ's senior commissioner is Kay Elmers. Tim Watkin is RNZ's executive producer for podcasts and series. This podcast was made possible by the RNZ and NZ On Air Innovation Fund. You can subscribe to this and every other RNZ podcast at Apple, Spotify, and other podcast providers. Please give us a rating. That way other people get to hear about the show.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.